All over the world, the Spirit is moving. And you know, as I worked on this global report, I was impressed of the work of the Holy Spirit in the countries, the parts of the world that I'm to report on. All over the world, as the prophets said it would be. And I think in a navigator context, it would be better for us to say, as the promises said it would be. And that, in a sense, is basically what I want to report on. God faithfully fulfilling His promises. Now, turn to your yellow section and you have an outline that we will follow here. Nav Global History, Emma and Lan. God is faithful to His promises. Numbers 23, 19 and 20. God is not a man that He should lie, nor the Son of Man that He should change His mind. Does He speak and then not act? Does He promise and not fulfill? I have received a command to bless. He has blessed, and I cannot change it. And this is Balaam, the false prophet, with great spiritual powers and divinations. And he says, when God commands to bless, He has blessed. As soon as He's given the command, and nothing I can do, or you, king with all your armies, there's nothing you can do to change it. Now, God gave Doss some promises. God has given each one of us some promises. And God is fulfilling them today. In Genesis 26:24, we read this. And the Lord appeared unto him the same night, this was Isaac, and said, I am the God of Abraham, thy father. Fear not, for I am with thee, and will bless thee, and multiply thy seed for my servant Abraham's sake. God is fulfilling the promises of blessing and multiplying for His servant Abraham's sake. And we are claiming the same promises. Dawson Trotman was, you and I are, and God is performing them. Now, because much of the area that I'm reporting on is an area in which I spent 20 years of my life, I would like to just state this very clearly. In Genesis 32:10, I am not worthy of the least of all the mercies and of all the truth which thou hast showed unto thy servant. And I think all of us, when we see God performing promises, we all have this, I am not worthy. I'm not performing any promises. I'm not worthy of this mercy and this truth of God. But He is doing it, and He gets the praise, and He gets the glory. When I went to Europe, while I was in Europe, Warren one time said, Doug, here's a promise I'm claiming for you. And this was a time when we were not having any fruit. It was a difficult, slow, hard time. A little one shall become a thousand, and a small one a strong nation. I, the Lord, will hasten it in my time. And Lauren said, Doug, I may never be 1,000 in my job, but I'm praying that you'll be 1,000. And he mentions some other men around the world, that they'll be 1,000. And so, before me, Dawson Trotman was claiming promises. And Lawrence Sanning was claiming promises. And so, I was asking God to give me some promises to claim. Now, I want to report on this part, these parts of the world in five sections. One, Western Europe. Two, Eastern Europe. Three, Africa. Four, the Middle East. And five, Latin America. Western Europe. We began in 1950. A team of men went to Europe, resided in Paris. Dave Rohr, George Clark, Bob Hopkins, who later went to Germany. During the first 4 years, 1950 to 1954, they were learning the language and trying to translate our materials into French, into German. In 1954, Doss and Lorne and a team of navigators came to Great Britain with the Billy Graham Crusade and began teaching counseling classes and setting up follow-up for mass evangelism. This paved the way for all the evangelists on the continent of Europe to say to the navigators who are just learning the language and just getting started, we need you to train our counselors and to help us follow up our converts. So the next 4 years, most of the men who were there in Europe were training counselors and doing mass follow-up work. In 1958, Lauren asked me if I would go to Europe. Dan Pyatt at that time was the European director, and because Lauren had taken over the presidency of the navigators, he did not feel he could continue to be the director of the counselor training and follow-up for Billy Graham. So Charlie Riggs was taking over that. And Charlie needed another man. And Billy Graham personally asked for Dan Pyatt. And so Lauren said, Doug, would you take over the work in Europe? Shortly before I was to leave for Europe, I had an operation on my knee. A cartilage removed from an old football accident. And as a result of that, a blood clot formed and went through my heart into my lung. And I was lying there in the hospital and I was in critical condition. And if another blood clot broke loose, that would probably be the end of me. And as I was praying and going through the scriptures and asking the Lord, what is it he's trying to do? He brought my attention to 2 Timothy 4:7, where Paul says, I have finished my course. I have kept the faith. But God was not telling me I had finished my course. He was saying, you haven't finished your course yet. And you need to keep the faith. I went to Europe with that. And while there in Europe, I saw such a contrast to what I had experienced 5 years in Taiwan and visiting the Philippines and Vietnam and Hong Kong and Okinawa and Japan. There people seemed to be so responsive to the gospel. There seemed to be so much happening. And in Europe, there was practically nothing happening. It was post-Christian. They had rejected Christianity and its history and its dogmas. And it was hard. It was totally different. I had never faced anything like it before. And God gave me 1 Thessalonians 5:24. Faithful is he that calleth you who also will do it. But do what, Lord? And he led me on into Isaiah 54, 1 through 3. Sing, O barren, and we certainly were barren. We were the most barren navigator work in the world. We were barren throughout Europe. Not that there wasn't any fruit, there was a little. But very little. Break forth into singing. Doug, I want to teach you to sing in barrenness. I want to teach you to sing the song of faith when there's nothing but faith to see. Cry aloud. Declare your faith. Thou didst not travail with child, for more are the children of the desolate than the children of the married wife, saith the Lord. Enlarge the place of thy tent, and stretch forth the curtains of thine habitation. Spare not, lengthen thy cords, and strengthen thy stakes. And the Lord was speaking to me, and he was saying, this is to be applied to your life. I want to enlarge you. I cannot do what I have on my heart to do the way you are right now. You're too small. Your love is too small. Your faith is too small. Your patience is too small. And so on. Enlarge the place of thy tent. And let them stretch forth the curtains of thine habitations. What I want to do is not going to be through you, it's going to be through them. It's going to be through the staff, it's going to be through the nationals. Let them stretch forth the curtain of thine habitations. Spare not. You're too soft, you're too easy on yourself. Learn to spare not. Lengthen thy cords. Your time in prayer is too brief. Your time in Bible study is too brief. You've got to learn to be a man of prayer, a man of the Word. And strengthen thy stakes. You've got to get convictions that are deep. Deep in the Word of God. And then, thou shalt break forth on the right hand and on the left. And thy seed shall inherit the Gentiles. And make the desolate cities to be inhabited. Now, when God gives a promise, he gives it not only to the man, but to the team. I didn't realize until about a year or so later that the Lord had, about that same time, had given that promise to Lawrence Annie. I shared it. Our staff was very small. And they embraced that promise. And I want to point out especially two who embraced that promise and claimed it with me, are still claiming it, and worked and claimed and stepped out on this promise for 20 years with me and Emma. Roger Anderson and Joyce Turner. And God has used them to probably raise up more Europeans than any two people during that time. And then God gave that promise, gave us a couple nationals. Herrick Dorneval, he gave to Roger Anderson, and Rob Parry Smith, he gave to me. And they began claiming those promises with us. And they began to grow, and they were equipped. And then, in 1966, after 8 years of working with individuals, small people were saying, why are things going so slow in Europe? And they were going slow. But God was raising up a foundation of many generations in individual lives throughout Europe, in Europeans. And in 1968, God led us to break into the university ministry, 1966. Rob Parry Smith began a ministry in Loughborough, and Herrick Dornevall began a ministry at the University of Delft in the Netherlands. And we began to see, thou shalt break forth on the right hand and on the left, and thy seed, these Europeans, shall inherit the Gentiles and make the desolate cities to be inhabited. And most of our leadership in Britain today were won to the Lord. Mike Trenier is heading up Africa. James Broad, who's one of the leaders in our work there. Almost the whole planning team. I won't take time to mention them all. Same thing in Delft. Lawrence Towan, who's directing our work in the Netherlands. Renus Balioa, who's directing our work in Sweden. Dallas Semelink, who was directing our work in Denmark and now is forming a traveling team for South Asia. And so on. We're one to the Lord. Case DeYoung, who's leading our work in two Eastern European countries, came to Christ in Delft. And so on. God began to all of a sudden, after this long, slow process, things began to break forth. And in a matter of 5 years, we had multiplied three times. And young, sharp European leadership were coming up, fruitful, effective in the grassroots ministry. God had done it. We started with a staff of about 30. In 1976, there were about 300. We hadn't sent any missionaries out when we started. In about 76, I think there were approximately 70 missionaries. Some MAs, ITs, some reps. We started in 7 countries. And after 20 years, we were in 24 countries. God was fulfilling his promise. They were breaking forth on the right and the left. They were inheriting the Gentiles. They were making desolate cities to be inhabited. We had about 20 areas in 1966 when we started to break forth. In 76, we had staff living in 70 different areas. God was at work. We were raising over $1 million a year from Europe alone, supporting the missionaries, supporting the staff. In 10 years, there were 8,000 converts, 3,000 new disciples. Excuse me, that's in 10 years, 66 to 76. And there was 1,000 disciple makers. A little one shall become 1,000. Somebody was faithfully claiming that promise And there were 1,000 new disciple makers in 10 years. Now, this was not the work of one person. First of all, it was the work of God. And He used people to claim promises. And He used hundreds very effectively in the lives of other people. I remember one time I was visiting a country, and one of the European reps, who is a friend of mine, he feels free to share his heart with me, and he said, you know, he said, I see all my peers, they're leading staff, and here I am, I'm not leading staff. And I said, believe me, brother, you have one of the healthiest ministries in Europe. And you're doing the most important ministry in the Navigators. Far more important than what I'm doing. Because I'm helping staff who help staff. But you're out where the action is. You're winning people to Christ. You're discipling them. You're equipping them. You're seeing them multiply. And you're doing one of the best jobs. And you're doing the most important job in the Navigator work. Now, for example, I remember in 1959. Some of you may not even been around then. No, I think you're all that older than that. We had our first half-day conference in the Netherlands. Oh, we prayed and we worked and we thought, would anybody come? And we were so elated. 36 people came. And they were responsive. Oh, that was about as big as we could trust God for at that time. And we were just delighted. It was exceeding abundantly above what we had expected. They had a nav day in 1976, 25 years later. No. What is it? 16 years later. You know how many came out to that nav day in the Netherlands? There was a national director, Herr Dorneval. He was a speaker. Didn't have to bring in any outsiders to attract a crowd. There were none. They were all Dutch. 5,000 came out to that NAV day. Not a half-day conference, an all-day conference, and into the evening. 5,000. Psalm 115. 1. Not unto us, O Lord, not unto us, but to your name be glory because of your love and faithfulness. It's His work. It's His doing. We're merely vessels. Eastern Europe. In the late 60s, I'm not sure the exact year, I began getting a burden for Eastern Europe. Things were beginning to explode on the right hand and the left in Western Europe. Now God was giving a burden for Eastern Europe. And in 1970, I was studying the Gospel of Mark. And I got to the second chapter. And I read verses 4 and 5. And when this is the Christ healing the man sick of palsy. And when they could not come nigh unto him for the press, they covered the roof. They uncovered the roof where he was. And when they had broken it up, they let down the bed wherein the sick of palsy lay. And when Jesus saw their faith, he said unto the sick of palsy, Son, thy sins be forgiven thee. And I wrote in my Bible, Jesus saw their faith. And I put Eastern Europe. Now, I had been doing some survey on Eastern Europe. And I had been talking to Christian leaders who worked in Eastern Europe. Who, Brother Andrew, knew him well. He lived in Holland, when I lived in Holland. He had a little old Volkswagen, broken down Volkswagen. He'd fill it with Bibles, hide it all around, and he'd drive into Eastern Europe. All his own. He was just a one-man show. He had one faith, one man, God. That's all he needed in the Bible, and that's all he needed. And several times he invited me to go with him, and there was always a conflict of schedule, and I wasn't able to go. But I began to find out from leaders in Eastern Europe who were working there, visiting there. And they said, no, they said, you can smuggle, but the type of ministry you're wanting to do, because I said, our calling is not smuggling. Our calling is not materials. I mean, we had learned something, I hope, over the years. Our calling is not materials, Bible studies. Our calling is equipping laborers. And it takes time, and it takes individual effort and individual contact. And it takes repeated individual contact. Impossible. You can't do it. The security is too great. I talked to certain navigators. What do you think? Ha! You can never make disciples by a traveling ministry. You got to live there. You got to model it. You can't do it. Now you just have to wait until God opens some door where we can get people living in there. Well, I had no peace about that. I talked to Lauren, and he was very sympathetic. But he said, Doug, we just don't have the resources. We've got so many requests for men all over the world, we can't open up a new field. And I came to this passage, and Jesus saw their faith. And I wrote something down in my Bible. They demonstrated, these men, these friends of this man sick of palsy, they demonstrated perseverance. They wouldn't give up. They couldn't get in the door. It was too jammed. They couldn't break through the crowd. Well, have to wait till the door opens up. Let's carry him back. Hope he lives. Till that door opens up. No, they persevered. They were concerned for their friend. They weren't going to give up. They weren't going to let something stop them. They were creative. There must be another way. We don't know what it is, but people everywhere, hey, they're not hanging down from the ceiling. That's the only place they're not people. That's the only place you can get in. So what did they do? They went up to the roof, and they just broke the roof up and let the man down. And what did Jesus see? He saw their faith. Well, God was giving us some terrific young leaders. So what did we do? We knew that if some gray heads, I wasn't quite as gray as I am now, but some old Americans, you know, would immediately be CIA. But there was one thing Eastern Europe was encouraging. Young people from universities to come and spend their summers on holidays and in camps. And they had these youth hostels all over Eastern Europe. And in my survey, I had discovered they didn't suspect young university students being CIA agents. So we banded little European teams from every country. and we sent them into Eastern Europe. And we gave them 10 things, one for each finger, that they had to find out. And they were to check out reaching young people in the camps. They were to check out the church situation and young people in the church situation. And they would ask God to give them an open door to come back with a desire that they might help disciple these people. Just tell you one story. Case DeYoung. At that time, he was about 3 years old in the Lord. He was the team leader for the Dutch guys. And they went through East Germany. And they happened to check out a church, and they found out that they were allowed, this particular group of churches, of some Lutheran group, they were allowed to have one youth conference a year. And young people were coming from all of these churches. And they found out who was the organizer of the conference, and they went to see him. Case DeYoung went to see him. And this man was a man of God, and he was the main speaker. He was speaking two or three times a day at this conference. And it was going to start in just a few days. And Case DeYoung got there, and he with this Dutch team, and they had worked out how they'd give their testimony of what God had done in their lives and what their vision were and how God had used this fellow and helped this fellow and so on. And they'd show him maybe the wheel. And so this fellow heard all this from this young Dutchman. He said, "This is what we need." He said, "I'm not going to speak at this conference. You're the speaker. And you're going to give those messages that you just gave to me." We found an open door. Response. Jesus saw the faith. And he not only said, "Thy sins be forgiven thee," he said, "Pick up your bed and walk." And we were on our way. Now, God always gives men of faith. And oh, how God gave us men of faith. Some of these young university students, a Dutchman, a Swede. And they had just graduated, so they gave 2 years just to help out. And then the resources started to come. Dick Fisher went to live in Yugoslavia, a communist country. And how God used him. And oh, the difficult, the first 3 or 4 years, you wondered if they were going to survive. You won't believe this. One day, they were renting a little apartment, and their landlord was living right next to them. And they were sitting there in their living room, and all of a sudden they heard bang, 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 and screams. And this lady, the landlady, came running into their apartment. She was just blood pouring all over her. She said, "My husband's just been shot." They ran into the landlord. He was bullet holes in him. He was bleeding profusely. They started to drag him out to the street to try to get a taxi. And Dick's wife, Marge, ran up to a fellow on the street, and she shook him. She said, "Can you get a taxi? Can you get a taxi?" And all of a sudden, she looked, and there was this guy with a gun in his hand. He was the one who had killed him. And he died before he got to the hospital. Well, but God, Dick's a creative fellow, and Dick began to figure out, how do you work among these people? And then, a year later, Paul Stanley came. And Paul is a tremendous leader, recruiter. And Paul began to just go out into those Eastern European countries day in and day out. They were committed. His wife was with him. Before Paul took the assignment, I told Phyllis in Paul's presence, I said, "Phyllis, now I'm asking your husband to take an assignment. When he leaves your family, and they have four beautiful children, and they're one of the warmest, most loving families I've ever seen. And I said, when you see Paul go out the door and you realize that maybe he won't come back, and that happens month after month after month after month, how are you going to live with that? And with tears in her eyes, she said, Paul fought in Vietnam, and I've had to live with that. But what he's going to do in Eastern Europe is so much more important than Vietnam. I'm willing. Well, we're working in 7 countries behind the Iron Curtain right now. And God is giving us leadership. Just 2 years ago, I visited one of those countries and one of the leaders. He's a man of stature in his own nation, in his field, in his vocation. And he's got a little team of 6, 1 girl and 5 guys. And they're in contact with 80 people they're witnessing to, led some to the Christ, discipling some. And it's right out there in the secular world. God is at work. Africa. In 1956, a team of us went to Africa. And we visited the Mau Mau camps. These were men who had fought against the British and were now in detainment camps. And back in 1956, well, you know, correspondence courses, follow-up, discipling. And so that went on until 1967. And we made some disciples, and they worked with other groups. But we didn't raise up any staff. There wasn't much discipling being done. And Jim White came to Kenya. And he began working with Kenya University students. And that began the foundation of much of our work in Kenya today. We took a survey trip in 1972 to Ghana and Nigeria, which I mentioned briefly before. Now, on that survey trip, we began to analyze what are the needs in Africa. And God gave a vision. It's Genesis 22:16 through 18, 2 Timothy 2:2. First of all, Africa is reported as probably the most responsive continent in the world. And it will be a Christian continent. But you know, when you hear of those thousands and thousands of decisions, you better divide it by about 6, because the average person makes at least 6 decisions for salvation. They're not well grounded in the Word. So we saw a vision of needing to get them into the Word and applying the Word to their life and their faith. Secondly, that men needed to be personally trained. The Africans are good preachers, but very little personal work being done. And trained to preach, but not necessarily to equip other laborers. Very little of that going on. And so we saw, yes, we've got to have a vision to equip men, man to man, see them multiply. And there's a lot of addition and subtraction going on in Africa. Adding to the church and then falling away and going into some syncretistic cult or whatever. A lot of addition, a lot of subtraction, but not much multiplication going on. And as I shared with you before, we made a declaration of faith concerning Nigeria. Even when there was opposition at every hand, that we would begin a work in Nigeria. Missionaries, nationals, the government, not giving visas, we declared by faith we were going to see these three things happen. Men of the Word, men being personally equipped, men multiplying. And we declared by faith. And you know, it's interesting. The same time we made this declaration of faith and announced we were coming to Nigeria and saw the whole atmosphere change and people began to receive us, the Lord had sent to Zaria, up in the northern part of Nigeria, a professor from the United States, Dr. Bob Tozig and his wife Mary. And Dr. Tozig at the Kansas State University used to open up his home to navigators. And Leroy Iams would come and preach and different ones. And, oh, they just loved the navigators, but they thought, oh, we could never be a navigator. But they got to Zaria and they saw this openness and responsiveness and the need for getting these people into the Word. So they took out their navigator Bible studies and they began to have Bible study groups. And then these Nigerians would just pour out their heart because Bob and Mary are very loving mother-father types. And they were having such a terrific ministry. And Bob visited me in London and he says, "Boy, Doug, I don't know what to do. We're not disciple makers." I said, "Well, don't think that way. You are disciple makers, or at least Jesus will make the disciples. You believe in Jesus, don't you? Well, then just follow him." And I thought, now who would be the best European I know to work with Africans? Now that's a principle. You want to work in a continent, you don't send somebody you don't need in your own country. You send your best. Okay. We sent John Ridgway to India. That was smart. Well, Mike Trenier is just a young fella. Bob Tozig could be his father. But Mike went there and he won Bob's heart. And he discipled Bob. And out of that ministry, we have got key Nigerians discipling men in at least a half a dozen cities of Nigeria today. Let me tell you about two fellows on our staff. One was discipled there in Zaria. I won't mention his name simply because I wouldn't want him to be a target of the enemy. But missionaries have told Mike Trenier. They have said, "Mike, we have never seen a family, a Christian family, like this family. The love, the devotion, husband and wife and children. We've never seen this in an African family before. We've never seen such Christian character and faith and godliness and humble service." Tell you about another fellow. I won't mention his name either. Both of these are on our staff in Nigeria now. He's known the Lord for only about 5 years. He was probably the first believer in his village. He has a gift of evangelism. One day, there was a military barracks down the road. And one day, a couple guys he had led to the Lord and discipled, he says, "You know, we were planning to spend the day together fellowshipping and in prayer." He says, "But, you know, those soldiers over there, they don't know the Lord." So they went over to that barracks, and that day they led 20 soldiers to Christ. He's only been a Christian for 5 years. He's personally led over 300 people to Christ. Lauren told me, he visited Nigeria, I think it was last December or January, somewhere in there. And he said, Doug, we have got such leaders of quality coming out of Kenya, Uganda, Ghana, Nigeria. He said, these men would be leaders in any group, not just Christian. He says, they're leaders. They're men of great caliber. God is raising up men of stature in Africa. And I believe that breaking forth on the right hand and on the left is coming very soon. And there's going to be a great impact in Africa through Africans. Now, the Middle East. Waldron Scott went to the Middle East in 1960 to 66. He had bifocal vision. He had a vision for men. And God gave him five men. He had a vision for the Arab world. And he implanted this vision into these five men. Bob Vedano arrived after Scotty left in 1968. He's been in the Middle East RD since then. Now let me tell you just about the three men. Nabil Jabour, one of Scotty's men, who Bob later trained as well. Nabil went to Egypt in the early 70s for a training program. Now Nabil, he has a vision for a man, and he looks for a man who's a leader. And he got this young engineer, and in the training program, he really gave him a vision for university students. You know what this young engineer did? In 2 years, he had student works in every university in Egypt. And he was a layman. There was such interest generated that the church, the Coptic Evangelical Church, a totally Egyptian church, the strongest Protestant church in Egypt, they invited the first missionary. Since missionaries were all expelled by Nasser about, in the late 50s, they invited a missionary in for the first time. And it was Nabil Jabour. And he began working with pastors who were leaders. And this vision is permeating through some of the churches there. Then there was a fellow, not an evangelical, but the Orthodox Church. It's called the Coptic Church. They figure Mark founded it. And it's like a Catholic church with a bishop, an archbishop, like a pope. But Nabil recruited one of its priests who had been born again, and he was out preaching the gospel, and 5,000 to 10,000 people would come to hear him preach. And Nabil gave him the vision of personally discipling men and seeing them multiply. He was so popular, he was written up in Christianity Today. He was so popular, he became a threat and was almost excommunicated from the church and was like in house arrest. But he'd still get time with Nabil, and he said, well, the Lord has closed the door for my public preaching, but the most important ministry of making and multiplying disciples, Nabil, that's going on, and I want you to continue to help me. Another one, Issam Curry. He's in Jordan. His vision's a little different. He's trying to work through clans. And God has given him outstanding couples in the society, but the idea is you reach your clan, the extended family. Bob Vedano is the third one. Bob was in the civil war between the Christians, so-called Christians, and the Muslims in Beirut. And Bob was seeing his ministry with university students and all. Well, in the middle of a civil war, you know, school stops. And Bob started to seek God. And God led him to Isaiah 42. And God was putting on Bob's heart that he should not major with people with a Christian background, but he should major with Muslims. And this was at a time when statistics were at their all-time high in the navigators. Well, how well are you doing? Let's look at the statistics. Not so good, not so many. Oh, very good. Look at these big numbers over here. They must be doing a wonderful work. We don't do that anymore, by the way, in case you're wondering. But Bob, he was under that pressure. And he was saying, oh, no, Lord, no, Lord, there won't be any statistics. And the Lord said, Bob, you get your hands off my glory. You stop working for reputation, what kind of a navigator you are, what kind of a navigator leader you are. I have a job for you to do. The navigators don't exist for themselves. They only are an instrument to get a job done. And God led Bob to Isaiah 42, 8, 7 and 8. What do I have down here? 8, 9 and 16. Okay, I'm the Lord, that is my name. And my glory I will not give to another, neither my praise to graven images. Behold, the former things are come to pass, and new things do I declare. Before they spring forth, I tell you of them. Verse 16, I will bring the blind by a way that they knew not. As far as Muslims, Bob was blind. He didn't know how to work with him. God says, I'll bring you in a way that you know not. So on. Well, we've got some Muslim disciples. And Bob's got a team of men who have a vision and a heart to reach Muslims. You know, during this drastic Beirut situation and the way Israel was dive bombing and the artillery was just destroying West Beirut, two navigator men who have got the vision that God gave Bob hung in there. They were university teachers, MAs. They taught scientific subjects, but they weren't doctors, but they were doing the work of doctors to show the love and the concern for the Muslim. They risked their life every day. And one has a wife and children. You see, God gives a vision of faith, and then he gives men of faith to accomplish that vision. Latin America. I've never been to Latin America, so my knowledge of Latin America is secondhand. But I've gotten this information from Jim Peterson and from Ken Lotus. And if I don't take as much time on Latin America, it is not because the ministry there is not as important or that God has done less. He has probably done more. God is greatly at work all over the world. The beginnings. George Sanchez went to Costa Rica in 1957. Jim Peterson went to Brazil in 1963, followed by Ken Lotus. In 1966, we opened up Mexico. In 1973, Argentina. In 1974, Venezuela. In 1981, Colombia. Now, it's interesting that God worked in a very similar way with Jim. God gave Jim a promise and a vision around that promise. And he also gave it to Ken Lotus, who joined Jim. And they would claim these promises together. You'll see Isaiah 43, 13 and 14. Not Isaiah 43, Isaiah 45. Isaiah 45, 13 and 14. I've raised him up in righteousness, and I will direct all his ways. He shall build my city. He shall let go my captives, not for price, nor reward, saith the Lord of hosts. Thus saith the Lord, the labor of Egypt and the merchandise of Ethiopia and of the Sabaeans, men of stature, shall come over unto thee, and they shall be thine. They shall come after thee in chains. They shall come over, and they shall fall down unto thee. They shall make supplication unto thee, saying, surely God is in thee, and there is none else. There is no God. And the Lord very strongly impressed this on Jim, and he did a study of the promise and the context, and he discovered that this was a specific historic promise in prophecy that was already fulfilled about 2,700 years ago. And Jim kind of sighed. He thought, oh, I thought maybe that could be for me in Brazil. But he couldn't forget it. So he sought the Lord about it. And he sensed that God was saying, what I said 2,700 years ago, I can say today. What I did 2,700 years ago, I can do today. And Jim's heart was filled with hope. Now, in this promise, he was going to lead him in a way. And he noted that he shall let go my captives. They shall come over thee in chains. And Jim thought, we must begin with evangelism. Evangelism. But he hadn't even learned the language yet. He and Ken were still learning it. So they'd go out at night, because late at night, the young men, university fellows and gals, they would be sitting out there in the streets drinking coffee or something else and fellowshipping. And Jim and Ken couldn't even talk to them yet. They'd walk by and they'd say, Lord, that's the kind of man. That's the kind of man we want there. Give us that kind of man that claimed this promise. That's the kind of gal we need. Give us something like that. Day after day, week after week, month after month, they'd go through that and they'd claim it together. They'd just walk out where they were, put their feet there and claim that kind of man, that kind of woman. And God started to give them to him. Now, they were Americans. There's one country I know in the world, Americans are quite popular still, at least unless that's Korean politeness. But America was helped to liberate Korea and save Korea from communism. But down in Latin America, that's probably the most unpopular place for an American to be. And here they were, Yankees from the north. And they were just learning the language. So the second thing, besides claiming the promises, they realized they had to depend totally on Scripture in the ministry. And so whenever they got arguments, they'd just say, well, let's look at what the Bible says. And they got people looking at to what the Bible said, and God began to give them fruit. Third thing, as these nationals were growing and developing, they made room for emerging national leadership. This city, I believe it was Curitiba, where they started, they had some good key men, disciple makers. And Jim and Ken got together and they said, you know, we're standing in these fellows' way to be developed. One of us is going to have to leave. They're not ready to be on their own yet, but one of us has got to leave. So Ken said, I'll leave. So Ken moved to another city to start all over. And Jim started what he called a little junta. You know, most Latin American countries are ruled by a military team called a junta. So he started this little junta. And as soon as he saw one of the guys was about ready to lead that, Jim moved out of town. They made way for emerging national leadership. Very important principle. Four. They assumed responsibility for their graduates. They saw that as fellows and gals graduated from the university, they went out by themselves. They thought, well, we're planting good seed. It'll just be fruitful and multiply. They saw the plant withered and died. And they decided, I guess we can't send them out alone. And we're going to have to take the responsibility for the laborers we raise up to help them make the transition and be effective in laboring in the community. And so they took their little Bible, started little Bible study groups, and they made them more than a Bible study group. They tried to develop a reproductive cell of caring for one another, encouraging one another, being out in the ministry with one another, besides just Bible study. And God has really blessed that. The fifth thing, and I added the fifth thing myself, and I think that all of us who are at the seminar on contextualization would agree, that they have pioneered most effectively in cultural adaptation or contextualizing the ministry. And I observed this last March when Jim and some of the Brazilians were there. Jim and Ken were committed to be true friends to the Brazilians. And to be a true, lasting friend, they had to identify with them. They had to make the changes, most of the changes, instead of the missionary requiring the national to make most of the changes. There has to be a certain amount of change from both sides. But they accentuated, we will change. And they were committed not only to be their friends, but to enjoy them and their culture. And that doesn't happen overnight. That takes years. But they did it. They were able to make that so they enjoy the Brazilian culture. Well, I just want to close with a psalm. Psalm 145. I'll read it in the NIV. I will exalt you, my God, the King. I will praise your name forever and ever. Every day I will praise you and extol your name forever and ever. Great is the Lord and most worthy of praise. His greatness no one can fathom. One generation will commend your works to another. They will tell of your mighty acts. I'm a generation away from you. I'm declaring some of the mighty acts that God has done. But your generation, my prayers will proclaim much greater acts than the past. We have just begun. One of the things Doss said before he died, and he was regarded in his generation as a great man of faith. He said, near the end of his life, he wished he had believed God for more. Henrietta Mears, perhaps the greatest woman of faith in her generation, at least in the United States. She is the one who discipled Bill Bright and taught Bill Bright how to trust God. And he is one of the great men of faith of our day. And I won't mention the many works of faith that she did. But just before she died, she said, if I had to live my life over, I would believe God for more and attempt more for God. And my challenge to this generation, you trust God for more than we trusted God for. Because He is more faithful and more capable to fulfill His promises than we have ever believed Him to be.